Last week we started a series of sermons on dealing with difficult people, and we talked last week about people who are especially critical, and we looked at how difficult people can lead us away from the mission and what God's trying to do. And I showed you a film clip of how easily we can get off the mission. If you weren't here last week, it was a clip of some NFL players who were asked to do a fairly simple task. They were asked to run a 9-minute mile, and what was their mission at the end of that 9-minute mile? Touch the white fence. I'm sure my concern is that you remember that more than anything else that was said last week, but I understand. He's a good communicator. And then run back in 9 minutes. And on the way, they encountered what they thought were some wild boars. And these four big NFL guys turned around in terror and ran back screaming like they were 5-year-old kids. And they never finished the mission. Then there were some FBI people who did the same thing, and they crouched into position. And he said that the difference was training. And the point was that we need to learn to train ourselves to respond differently to the things around us. But we talked about our mission, and our mission is given by God in Scripture, and that is to love God and to love others. And all of the missions, in many ways, come out of these two missions that God has given to us. And so I want to talk about that this morning. And look at how things distract us from that, both people in our lives, and then us maybe even distracting other people from the mission that God has for them. How many of you sometime in your life have seen The Wizard of Oz? Yeah, I saw it early on. I don't know why people show kids The Wizard of Oz when they're young. I had nightmares for weeks of flying monkeys. I don't know who dreamed that up. I wonder if they were on acid or something. Who puts wings on monkeys and then has them carry people away? And thinks it's a good idea to show this to little kids. You know? And yet we do it generation after generation. Little kids see it and they're scared, and we tell them, it's okay, in about 7 or 8 years you won't be scared anymore. But there's a lot in that movie. The thing that really stood out for me in that movie was one of the ending scenes, and that was the Wizard of Oz itself. And there was a telling scene at the end where Toto gets involved. Remember this? And Toto runs back and grabs the curtain and pulls back the curtain, and we see that the wizard is no more than what looks like what ends up being a jolly old man who is controlling smoke and fire and a microphone. And in the end, what we see was that he was manipulating the people in the story. It all ends well because apparently the people who are manipulated get what they wanted in the end anyway. The scarecrow gets a brain, and the lion gets courage. I don't know that Dorothy ever got anything, did she? What's that? She got to go home? I know, but that, you know. She got shoes? She got a pair of shoes out of it. Thanks, Dallas. Yes, she ultimately got to go home. It's true, yes. I was struck in that the whole story. As a matter of fact, in many ways, religion has been accused of being kind of just a person behind the curtain doing that. And that's sad because God is not a manipulator, even though human beings, we all often are and are guilty of that. So that's what I want to talk about this morning. I want to share with you a joke. It's not a good joke, but it is a joke. Here it is. St. Peter was supposedly standing in heaven, managing the entrance to heaven with all the men. And there were two doors with two large banners over them. The first banner said, for all the men who were controlled by their wives. And this line was as far back as the eye could see. Man after man after man who was standing there. And then there was another sign that said, for men who were not controlled by their lives. And there was one lonely guy standing underneath the banner. St. Peter went up to him and said, with all due respect, why are you standing here, sir, underneath this sign that says, for men not controlled by their wives? And the guy looked at him and kind of dumbfounded and said, I don't know, man. My wife just told me to stand here and shut up. And I'm doing what I was told. In truth be told, there's two images that I really kind of hate that culture does. One is kind of the nagging woman. I really don't like that image that's being put out there all the time. And I also don't like the image of the stupid man, which is kind of put out there all the time. But those two images are put out there a lot. The dictionary definition of manipulate is to handle or control in a skillful manner. Manipulation is to exert shrewd or devious influence, especially to one's own advantage. There is a difference, I think, between influence and manipulation, and sometimes it's in the heart of the person doing it, I suppose. It's an interesting thought to work through, but I want to talk about this because not only have you and I been manipulated, but we've also been manipulators. I've been on both sides of that equation. I have manipulated others, and I have been manipulated. And the effects of that affect our mission, which is what Jesus called us to be about. And so I want to talk about this morning and what the Bible has to say about it. And I want to look at two stories. One of them is by a woman who manipulated someone, and the other is by a man who manipulated someone. We are equal opportunity in terms of that, our ability to do that. And so I want to look at those together and see what the Bible says about this and how we're to respond to it. The first story is in Judges chapter 16, and it's the story of Samson and Delilah. The story ultimately is about something different, but it comes from the standpoint and then talks to the most important part of it. So Samson had supernatural strength. How many of you know our sheriff in town, Vince Shambaugh? He's a big guy, isn't he? Vince is a big guy. Now, here's the thing. No one walks around asking what the secret of Vince's strength is. We know why Vince is strong. Why is Vince strong? Because he works out, right? That's why he's strong. Samson was a little bit different. Samson had a supernatural strength, okay? In those days, they would guard a gate, guard a city by having a gate in front of, there would be a huge wall around the city, and then there would be a giant gate that would protect it. You've seen it in movies where they storm the gates, right? And so the gate would be bigger than this whole opening here. It was enormous. And Samson at one point in time was so strong that he literally walked over to one city gate and he picked it up on his back and he carried it away. That's not normal. I mean, have you ever seen anybody do anything like that? So they understood that there was a secret to his strength. So Delilah, whom he probably shouldn't have been with because Samson's mission was to go after the Philistines, Delilah was trying to find out what his secret was. He was in love with Delilah. And so Delilah said to Samson, "Tell me the secret of your great strength and how you can be tied and subdued." Now, on first blush, doesn't it seem a little strange that Samson wouldn't be like, "Why are you even asking this question?" I mean, it makes no sense on the surface of it. Samson answered her, however. He's answering in kind of a playful way. "If anyone ties me up with 7 fresh thongs," and by that, it really is bowstrings that have not been dried, "I'll become as weak as any other man." Then the rulers of the Philistines brought her 7 fresh bowstrings that had not been dried and tied them with them. When the men were hidden in the room, she called out to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." Probably more like, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." Like she didn't know it was going to happen, right? Oh no! But he snapped the bowstrings as easily as a piece of string snaps when it comes close to the flame. So the secret of his strength was not discovered. Then Delilah said, "Samson, you've made a fool of me." She had a little conversation with him. "Now, Samson, you know that we're close. And I'm trying to kill you. And you've made a fool of me. Because you haven't told me your secret." What's that called? Yes, it is manipulation, but what's it called? G-U-I-L-T. Guilt. It's guilt. That's what it is, right? And one of the greatest tools of manipulators is guilt. As a matter of fact, we'll see it even further on, more clearly. But she says, "You made a fool out of me. You lied to me. Come now. This time, be truthful with me. Tell me how I can kill you." Don't you wonder why he's in this relationship? "Tell me how you can be tied." He said, "If anyone ties me securely with new ropes that have never been used, I'll become as weak as any other man." So Delilah took new ropes and tied him with them. Then the men hidden in the room, with the men in the room, she called to them, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." But he snapped the ropes off his arms as if they were threads. And then Delilah said again to Samson, "Until now you've been making a fool of me and lying to me. You've hurt my feelings. Please tell me your secret and how you can be tied." And he replied, "If you weave..." Now, can you see a pattern in this? Now, when we read this story, this is really important. When we read this story, we see it as clear as day. When you are being manipulated, you oftentimes don't even see it. You don't realize it's happening. Why? Why did Samson not see it? Because he cared about her. And he was making excuses for her. She doesn't really mean it. She doesn't want to kill me. It's just a friendly little wager. And we make excuses for that person. And so he replied, if you weave 7 braids of my head into the fabric, give me cornrows. I'm not making this stuff up. This is what it says. On the loom and tighten it with a pin, I'll become as weak as any other man. So while he was sleeping, Delilah, surprise, surprise, took the 7 braids of his head, wove them into the fabric and tightened them with a pin. Again, she called to him, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. And again, he woke from his sleep and pulled the pin out of the loom with the fabric. And she said to him, how can you say, I love you? Aren't we close? I'm trying to kill you, but don't I mean the world to you? It sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? But it's true. When you won't confide in me, this is the third time you've made a fool of me and haven't told me the secret of your strength. With such, I hate to say the word, but nagging, she prodded him day after day after day until he was tired to death. How many of you have finally told somebody something just because they nagged you? And by the way, it doesn't have to be a woman, it could be a man. Hello. I mean, just eventually people can break you down when they do it again and again and again and again. So he says, he told her, what's the word say? Everything. No razor has ever been used on my head because I have been a Nazirite set apart to God since birth. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me and I would become as weak as any other man. When Delilah saw that he told her everything, why? Because his secret was tied to God. So when she pushed him to that place, this not only affected his strength, what did it affect? His relationship with God. It affected his relationship with God. When Delilah saw that he told her everything, she sent word to the rulers of the Philistines, come back once more. He's told me everything. So the rulers of the Philistines returned with silver. Why is silver significant? Yeah, that's what Judas was paid for betraying Jesus. The betrayal. Having put him to sleep on her lap, she called the men to shave the 7 braids out of his hair, and so began to subdue him, and his strength left him. Then she called, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. And he woke from his sleep and thought, I'll go out as before and shake myself free. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. The Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, and took him down to Gaza, binding him with bronze shackles. They set him to grinding in prison. In other words, he was on that, he had a post that he was pushing to grind wheat or corn. But the hair on his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. And of course, the end of his story was that the very last act was for Samson to die killing other Philistines. But his mission, his relationship with God, his future and his well-being were all affected by that. In the past month, I've had 2 people in the community come to me who have been in abusive relationships. They've just called me up and said, can I come and talk to you? I hear you're a pastor. Can I please speak to you? And I said, yes. And they have talked about how they've been abused and manipulated. And I said to one of them, this needs to be different you came to me 10 years ago with the same story. Don't you think in 10 years you're going to come back with the same story? And they said, yes, but I can't leave him. He needs me. And I said, do you think this is how God would want it? I don't think it is. There's a long distance between, there are shades in relationships, and there are some places where there is an appropriate time when you're being physically abused to walk away. And sometimes some people can't. And that's really hard. The second story that we look at is in Matthew chapter 16. In Matthew chapter 16, just before this, in the several verses before this, the scripture says that Jesus asked his disciples, who do others say that I am? And then who do you say that I am? And Simon Peter raised his hand and said, I think I have an answer to that. You're the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus said, flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who's in heaven. And just after that story, it says this, from that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hand of elders, chief priests and teachers of the law, and then he must be killed and on the third day rise from the dead to life. And Peter, who had just proclaimed that he was the Christ, the Son of the living God, Peter took him aside out of the crowd. He said, come here, Jesus, I need to tell you something. Look, I understand that you and your Father have a plan, but let me make a suggestion to you. I've been thinking, and there's this new thing called Facebook. If we put up your page on Facebook and people begin to understand who you are, you're going to get a really big following. If you keep the healing machine running, if you keep feeding the poor the way you've been doing, we are going to build a worldwide empire. And with Skype, we're going to be able to get you everywhere. And before you know it, you're going to have an empire. And we got Judas is a great treasurer. We got one of the disciples. He used to be a soldier. He'll be a bouncer when people get a little close. We got the whole thing mapped out here. Jesus, Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Never, Lord, this shall never happen to you. And Jesus turned to Peter and said to the guy who just proclaimed that he was Lord, get behind me. Let me just say, I'm not recommending that you say this to your spouse. Or someone else who's trying to manipulate you. Get behind me, Satan. Jesus is identifying where this is coming from. I don't know. I'm going to guess that you've done this. I have. There have been times when God has had a plan and I've tried to manipulate God. I've tried to say, I know you've got a plan, but just hear me out. I've sketched out some things on this napkin that I think are really good. If you just take a look at this, this would make a nice substitute for whatever you're planning. If you would just accept this, just submit, I'm going to submit this and accept it. Have you ever done that? I know you got a great plan, God, but here's my thought on it. And Jesus says, look, you might build an empire, but you're not building my kingdom. My kingdom is going to be born out of the fact that I have to suffer and die and rise from the dead. And your plan doesn't come from God. And if it doesn't come from God, where does it come from? And that's what he's saying. And he says, you're a stumbling block to me. You're not helping me with my mission. You do not have in mind the things of God, but the things of men. You want glory. You don't want salvation. And Jesus said to his disciples, here's what I need to talk to you about. He said, there's a dynamic going on where you want to control to get what you want. You want to exert control, and if you can't get it directly, you're going to go around it to get it. So he says, if anyone will come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For, he says, whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for me will find it. What good would it be for a man to gain the whole world, yet forfeit his soul? And here, there's two sides to this. When we manipulate others, and I have, you forget that God's in control. And you decide to take control in a place that you shouldn't. and we think that offering change or suggestions. Man, I've heard people say, look, if I just have a few more years to train my spouse, they'll be exactly where I need them to be. And I think, oh, no. No. And when you've been manipulated, when someone has manipulated you, it's hard. And Jesus, what he does is he calls it out and he has the conversation. He says, let's talk about what's really happening here. You know who the greatest manipulators in my life are right now? They are my 5, 7, and 9-year-olds. Oh my gosh. They are really good at maneuvering. They can turn on the tears, but Dad! They will pit parent against parent. This has never happened in your lives, has it? Oh my word. And as a parent, sometimes it's hard to see through it. It'll be okay. We can get you that rocket. Jesus was saying, look, this affects our relationships and it affects our mission. And we have to do this differently. Differently. That requires us to respond differently to people when they're trying to manipulate us. And when we discover, whether it's intentional or unintentional, that we are trying to be manipulative. And there's a human instinct to try and get what we want. It's part of being human. But part of what Jesus calls us to is something different. And we have to begin to train ourselves to respond differently. We have to learn not to be motivated by guilt. When somebody says, but if you really, all right. And we have to learn to be careful about how we treat others, all of us. When we do that, we have a greater ability to focus on the mission which God has given us. As we take time to think about this in our lives, we're going to sing I Surrender All, which is number 354. Would you sing with me the first and last verse?